Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan and still from Ireland, Sligo to be exact. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother? How you feeling?
Feeling great.
Good.
Thanks to everyone who wished me well. Two negative tests on Monday and Tuesday, and just feeling great. So I shall go to the dance. The dance being Europa Conference League action. Sligo Rovers versus Ballytown. Second leg tomorrow night.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. What are we looking at? What's the aggregate?
It's 2-1 Sligo. So I think if we're using the cliches, it's finally poised.
Uh-huh. Oh, well, I'm going to want a lot of pictures. If you can pick me up a t-shirt, I'll pay you back. I would love a Sligo Rovers t-shirt.
I would love to get you one. I may forget to do that, but I might get you a half and half scarf.
No. You know that's almost on full kit W level for us. We don't subscribe to that. Speaking of which, can you go full kit W, please, to this game? I'm begging you.
No, I can't. I mean, I shared with you just the most unbelievable example, and now I'm sharing it with our entire listenership. I do not care. A former teammate of mine went full kit W for pickup in the park the other day.
God bless him.
I sent you the picture from his Instagram.
Yeah. He looks great.
I mean, did he?
Looked like Benzema.
Guys, he wore Real Madrid home shorts, Real Madrid socks. The full thing, and the socks pulled up above the knee. Just, and the guy's got to be 37. You can't do that.
I think it's great. I love
you
that he's 37.
You didn't. You replied to me. You said this is horrifying.
You know, I don't know if I ever told you this. When the when I was in high school, the Sixers were in the NBA Finals, and I went to a couple of the games. We were really lucky. We had season tickets, and we managed to get playoff tickets. It was incredible. But I went Iverson full kit W. Now I didn't go cornrows, but I had Sixers shorts. And I had Iverson's black jersey. And this was, I think it was the first year where he started using the sleeve. Like, he was one of the first guys to have, like, the full arm sleeve. So I took, a long sock. Like, there were no sleeves. They weren't being sold. So I just took a long sock, and I cut a hole at the end, and I wore it on my arm as well. I did it a little bit. I wasn't doing it to be cool. I was almost doing it, like, ironically. Like, I was just, like, being that guy, kind of. It's the people who go full kit W because they think it's cool. Those are the people that I love and admire and want to be like.
Dude, how old were you?
I was a junior in high school.
All right. I mean, this guy thinks he looks good.
Okay.
That's the difference.
My hero. I love that guy. I want to be like him. I want to be friends with him. What a show. What a show we have coming up for you. I'm so excited for this. Wayne Rooney is back in MLS. It's a match made in heaven. We're going to talk to Jeff Carlisle, and actually, in just a few moments, he's standing by patiently. So we'll talk to him about that and some other things, MLS and U.S. Men's National Team related. A couple transfer things that I wanted to get to. It's interesting, JJ. I got into the animal cages on Reddit, and I saw some of the guys in there saying, you know, I don't know why the guys keep complaining about talking about transfer rumors. And they were kind of saying, like, we enjoy it, and they actually talk about it pretty well and rationally. And then after I read that, I didn't even tell you this. You know, I don't usually check, like, the metrics of how many people are listening to each episode, but sometimes when I have to post a podcast, sometimes the home screen, it just appears on, like, what recent episodes have done. And we just recently did a podcast. It was, I think it was called the Transfer Rumors Heating Up, something like that was the title of it. And it's, the numbers on it are phenomenal. And so, like, seeing that comment in the Reddit, seeing the metrics on how well that episode is doing, I think I'm ready to go full 180. And I think in November we're going to do transfer rumors. I'm fully embracing it. and I'm throwing away all my preconceived thoughts and notions that it's annoying, it's nonsense, none of it, people don't want to hear about it. I think it's all BS. I think people are obsessed with it, and I'm ready to lean in.
Which is why you've decided to front load this podcast with MLS.
Yes, but the key is in the title. I think, JJ, even in podcasts where we don't mention a single transfer rumor, I'm just going to title it Transfer Rumors. And I think we'll get tons of clicks. I think it's the key to success for us.
I think you're wrong. I think people just enjoy having us still in their lives during the summer. By the way, we're how many days out from what would have been the World Cup final?
I think I saw that, what was it, like 2 days ago or something, was the anniversary of the Zidane headbutt.
Oh.
Or like when France beat Brazil, like a couple anniversaries of memorable World Cup finals have just come and gone. And it just made me think, like, we should like think of what we would normally be doing right now.
This is just vandalism. What's happened? Absolute vandalism.
Think of how much fun the fall is going to be, though. You get a little fire going in the fireplace. It's crisp outside. You're off. Black Friday. Family. Don't have to worry about
and
work.
Spluttering with COVID-19.
Oh, would you? By the way, that's happening now. So what's the difference?
Yeah.
Think of your World Cup final viewing experience had it just happened over this past weekend. What that would have been like. We would have had to cancel any kind of live show plans or anything. All would have been out the door. Or you would have been in a hazmat suit.
I would have showed up in a hazmat.
Yeah. So
full kit hazmat W.
Hazmat FC. All right, let's get into it. Like I said, Jeff is standing by, but wanted to mention, obviously, the big story here in the United States over the past few days is Wayne Rooney, who spent some time with DC United. It's funny, if I was putting together like a YouTube compilation of Andrew Gunling's favorite MLS moments, I'll tell you what, man, I know it wasn't in the postseason, but the Rooney chase down tackle, 50-yard assist in stoppage time to win it, like that's like top five easy on my list. And this moment is now DC United fans are going to get to kind of dust off those thoughts and memories as he'll be now patrolling the sideline for him. It's exciting.
It is exciting. Just on that clip, I love that clip. I always watch that clip. I will never figure out what the goalkeeper was doing. Like
why he was up?
How that weak header could get past him. Just everything about what Rooney did was amazing, though. Oh, yeah. Really amazing, like superhero stuff. Yeah, this is such a strange move because I didn't see it coming and I didn't see him leaving Derby. I thought he was there for the long run, for the long haul. And obviously things are so difficult there that he felt he just couldn't do the job. And I thought the next move would be a different job in England. DC United was not on my radar. I'm not sure where I'm at with this move yet. Like, I
for
think
who?
It's good
for him or the club?
No, I think it's good for the club. I think you're getting a young, cerebral, something that probably hasn't been said much about Rooney in his life, really, the way he's been portrayed, but a cerebral football manager who did an exceptional job, and albeit under the most unbelievable circumstances, if it wasn't for those points deductions, what we would be saying, it was one of the greatest jobs that had ever been done, one of the greatest rescue missions in football. But I think it's a great move for DC. For him, you know, putting aside my disappointment and the disappointment of a lot of people that he didn't stay in England and take another challenge or continue the challenge with Derby. He's going here now. If he does well, first of all, it's low risk. He can't get relegated. He's not under that pressure anymore. He can build out his philosophies, build out his ideas about football, try and mold a team in what he thinks the way football is supposed to be played. And he can't lose. He does a solid job and he'll be back in England very, very soon, which I feel like the reason his family aren't going with him, you know, indicates that this will be a quick hit. Get in, be successful, get out. Taylor Twelman tweeted this: not sure I will understand how Rooney leaves DC United as a player because family didn't like DC, their words not mine, in their own documentary, and now he is back as manager without the family. Okay then. I think he's back because this won't be a very long appointment, but he'll aim for it to be as successful as possible.
I mean, I would think it'll be a year and a half.
It'll be, but it could be, he's probably looking at maybe Patrick Vieira, someone like that, who's made that journey. Jesse Marsh, maybe a bit more circuitous. And he's saying, I can do that. And I can also get games under my belt in a low pressure scenario in terms of the complete opposite to what he had to deal with at Derby. I think it's probably a good move all around. If you can put aside, which I know Derby fans are struggling with right now, the hurt feelings because of the things he said, how he was committed. Remember that video of him in the car park, in the parking lot after Derby were relegated, talking to the fans.
We played it on this show, didn't we?
We did. He was here for the long term, here for the long haul, and he really wanted to bring the club back to glory. I mean, it's got to hurt to see him then jet off to DC United. No disrespect to DC United.
So it sounds to me almost like you started out skeptical and you talked yourself into it.
Correct.
Yeah.
As I do with many things.
We went on a journey there.
Yeah. Now, Craig Hope is on a more bombastic journey. Writing in the Daily Mail, he said, Rooney had done the hard yards at Derby last season, only to take what now feels like the easy option. His franchise may be joint bottom of the Eastern Conference, but they cannot be relegated. There is no jeopardy. How does that tally with the fighter in him? What can he really prove within a league which in many ways adheres to principles and practices very different to those of English and European football? That's the consensus on this side of the water, Andrew, that he's taken a soft option.
Look, I'm not going to say that I don't understand that. I get where they're coming from. I would dispute the notion that there's no jeopardy. I do think I can't put up an argument to the jeopardy of relegation. Of course, I wouldn't even begin to try to. But there's an embarrassment to not making the playoffs in a league where we talk about, you know, everyone makes the playoffs. Like that's, you know, so I'm not going to say that there's no jeopardy. Missing the playoffs is something. So I do understand what he's saying, and I don't know that I would expect journalists in England to be on board with this or to think that this is the natural progression of where his career was going. That doesn't mean that I think it's – just because I understand where they're coming from, I don't know that I fully agree with them. I think that he can gain extremely valuable experience here. I mean, look, one way to look at it, JJ, 10% of Premier League managers used MLS as a springboard to their European managerial careers. So I think some of those barriers are maybe being broken down. I think that, you know, whatever stigmas there were around the league, even as little as 5 years ago, I think some of those have eroded away a little bit.
I think Craig's argument is more not being disrespectful to MLS, but more you don't need another path to get to where you want to be. You're already there. You've cut out the middleman with the work you did at Derby. So you don't need the kind of launch pad of MLS. Now, I honestly think, Andrew, you factor in the past 18 months for Rooney, the complete turmoil at Derby, where he worked really, really hard, the turmoil in his personal life in the last few months in terms of the press and media attention over the Colleen Rooney, Rebecca Vardy court case, where he was unfortunately front and center. He spoke in an interview to ESPN, I think it was, when he was a player at DC United, how he liked the anonymity where he could do his job as a footballer and generally be left alone. And I think that is a part of things too. I really do think
that's interesting
that he wants a little break.
Yeah. You hear about that as being kind of this like low key appeal to playing in MLS. Bale too. You know, that sort of like Bale spotlight in Real Madrid and just like just the burden that it felt like that had become. That will not be the case in Los Angeles. These guys will get recognized, but probably like they'll get recognized just enough where it will like appease their ego. Like, okay, good. People still know who I am. But like it won't burden their lives, you know?
And also the feral English tabloid media is not here.
Right.
And that's a big thing.
Now, Wayne, he did get recognized as soon as he stepped into like the terminal off the plane at Dulles.
Sure. He's England's greatest goal scorer.
Yeah. It's interesting seeing him now. Like, he's only 36, JJ. I'm starting to think that he could be submitted in the 80s aging badly football tournament.
He's got stocky.
He looks older than 36.
Yeah. The graying in the beard plus the general, what you call it, thickening around the waist.
He looks a little weathered.
Like I said, I mean, I'd be weathered if I'd spent that amount of time at Derby County in those circumstances.
And think of like how popular, how young he was when he came up. He was a star immediately. So he's been under that spotlight for 20 years.
He's lived his life in it.
Right.
And, you know, the documentary, which we talked about a little bit about, I don't know if you've watched it yet, but the documentary kind of gave you a window, a little bit of more of a glimpse into his life. And that spotlight has been it's been so bright for so long. And I can totally understand why he might want to take a step away from it for a bit.
All right, well, for more on this now and some other things happening around MLS, we bring in our own Jeff Carlisle of ESPN FC. What's up, Jeff? How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We're doing good. We've been talking a little bit about Wayne Rooney back in the nation's capital. It's fascinating to me. Can you give us any sort of insight as to how this played out, how long this might have been in the works? How did this all kind of come about?
Well, I mean, to hear Rooney tell it, the talks have been going on for a couple of weeks. And I think what sparked it, was a few things. I mean, obviously he had resigned from Derby County, so he was available. And then, DC United's results have been pretty poor. I think they've got like 5 points from their last 7 games. And so, you know, the kind of the Pavlovian response of firing a manager and then, you know, there's that uptick in results. I mean, that happened a little bit, but then, you know, water finds its own level and DC United kind of sank back to their previous level of poor play. And so, you add that up all together. And I think Rooney's stay, while short, was viewed pretty positive. I'm talking about his tenure there in 2018, 2019. And so, you know, it all just came together. And, when he joined them as a player, they were in dire straits. And now he's doing the same as a manager. So we'll see if he has the same kind of magic this time.
What's the expectation, Jeff, in terms of what Rooney needs to do? How much rope is he going to get at DC United?
Well, I think he's going to get a fair bit of rope. I mean, the talk is already that, you know, a lot of quality players that he has contacts with overseas have expressed interest in coming. They have 2 open DP slots that they have to fill. I mean, they don't have to fill them, but they're there to be filled. And so, I think he's going to be given a fair bit of latitude. I think the Rooney is savior angle is, I mean, there's some danger to it. There's some risk to it because obviously he can't play. And he's going to have to do the business as a manager. And for that to work, everything around him needs to work as well. And that's the recruiting. And that's, you know, sticking to the style that they kind of started under Hernan Losada, where, you know, they were, you know, a high pressing team, very aggressive. I mean, I don't think it'll be quite the same under Rooney. I mean, from what I'm told, they're still going to press, but they're just going to do it in a different way. But I mean, it's still a course correction, no matter how you slice it. So, I mean, I think he's going to, I think, you know, there's a lot of respect for him within the organization. I think he's got a pretty high soccer IQ. I think he did a really good job at Derby under some incredibly difficult circumstances. So I think you add all those things up and I think he's going to be allowed to have considerable say in what happens in terms of the direction of the club going forward.
Jeff, it's interesting with MLS, you know, the league in terms of players that have entered it, it's kind of changed a little bit. You know, MLS has gone with the model of, you know, more younger players who are kind of using this league as a springboard to bigger things. Are we seeing that kind of mirror itself in the coaching ranks as well? Jesse Marsh, a springboard over to Europe, Patrick Vieira, you know, Rooney has ambitions of managing in the Premier League. Is MLS now being viewed in a similar light from a coaching perspective?
I think so. I mean, throw in Tata Martino and, mm-hmm. and most recently Ronnie Dela. I mean,
right, yeah.
You know, I think Ronnie Dela, you know, he won an MLS Cup and he, you know, he used that as a springboard to get back to Europe. And so, you know, I think that possibility is there. I think it's rarer for American managers than it is for foreign managers. I mean, obviously a guy like Martino had the pedigree going in, so that wasn't a huge surprise, but and Patrick Vieira too. But I think you are seeing that dynamic start to unfold a little bit more broadly than it was before. You know, we'll see the extent to which it continues. But I think in Rooney's case, I would be surprised if he's there beyond the 2023 season, beyond the end of it, I should say. I think he'll be here 18 months, you know, and by then I would, you know, assuming that he's relatively successful, I would expect that he'll get an offer to go back, you know, to the UK, and he'll probably take it. Obviously, he's not going to just jump at anything. I mean, he was linked with the Everton job previously. I think that's everybody's expectation that 18 months, maybe 24 months is about, you know, the high end of how long he'll be there.
Jeff, does that explain why his family is not traveling with him?
I think so. I mean, I think if this were, you know, I've seen conflicting. I thought he was under like a 3.5-year deal when as a player and he left early. But obviously the family situation precipitated that and they're not coming along this time. So you think about kind of the abbreviated season this year because of the World Cup. So he'll probably be back home by October and then he'll have, you know, spend the vast majority of the winter there. And, you know, if he sticks around, he'll be back in the United States by January. But you know, then there's the summer as well. I think that explains in large part why the family isn't joining him over here. And you know, we'll see how that plays out. But again, I think if you're talking about like an 18-month spell with enough breaks in there to have some visits and, you know, jet back to the UK if you know he feels like he needs to see the family. I mean, I think all those things are possible. So yeah, I think that explains that dynamic in large part.
Jeff, speaking of former players and managerial positions, rumors of Landon Donovan being a finalist for the job at San Jose. Now he's dipped his toe into coaching a little bit with the San Diego Loyal. You've covered him pretty much his entire career. Coaching, is that something that you envision with him?
Not really. I mean, you know, in watching the entirety of Donovan's career, I mean, by the end, I mean, he really had a love-hate relationship with the game, it seemed like. I mean, he took that sabbatical. He came back. You know, he retired once. He retired twice. You know, there's this kind of this push-pull with it. And you know, it just didn't seem like he loved the game by the end. Now, granted, he did some things that, you know, one could argue were designed to kind of get his love back. I mean, he went to Mexico with Club León. He played indoors for a bit. But I remember when he took the job, you know, in 20 ahead of the 2020 USL season, I was just like, is this going to work? And he was pretty candid about, what his expectations were. He said, hey, if I hate it, if I'm not good at it, I'll quit. And, he had the advantage of being able to fire himself because he's part owner of the law. He's got an ownership stake there. So, but I think he's loved it enough and enjoyed it that he wants to continue to do it. And, he's a very kind of almost old school manager in that he leaves a lot of the day-to-day coaching to others. At least that was his approach early on. I mean, I can't swear that that's still the case, but he kind of took a page out of Frankie Howell's book, I think, where, he kind of left the day-to-day, the running of training to assistants and then would step in when he felt the need. But he seems to have taken to it, and he's fiercely loyal and the no pun intended, and protective of his players. I mean, I think, the whole Colin Martin situation where he pulled his team off the field because of a homophobic slur that was thrown at one of his players. I think that resonated in that locker room, and I think it built a lot of credibility that, he was there for the long haul. I mean, and he was going to stick to his principles and stick to his beliefs. And so the team's doing fairly well this year. I mean, I think last I checked, they were in third place in the Western Conference of the USL. They were bounced in the first round of the playoffs last year, I believe, if memory serves. And we'll see, if he continues with it, we'll see how he does, or if he pulls up stakes and gets back with the Quakes. I mean, that would be utterly hilarious on a certain level if he went to San Jose, because obviously the manner of his departure, where he went back to Leverkusen, but then, signed with the hated Galaxy, the Quakes' arch rivals. That soured a lot of Quakes fans on Landon Donovan, and there was a great tweet that I retweeted about how it would be like Darth Vader throwing Senator Palpatine down the shaft, like in Star Wars. So, I mean, it would be something if he went back there and won some things. That would be just quite the dramatic arc, if you will.
Jeff, I need some information here. Is Gabby Slonina going to Chelsea or not?
I think ultimately he will. Last I checked, and this is basically confirming my colleagues at The Athletic, the deal's not done yet. There's still talks ongoing. But I think Chelsea are very much in the lead. I think it would include a loan back to the Fire. I think he'd finish out the year with the Fire, and then they'd see what's next.
Right.
I think this talk of him being like Chelsea's third string keeper, I really don't see that at this stage of his career. He needs games. And I think for now, MLS is a perfectly good place to kind of earn that experience. He's had some shaky moments this year. He's given up some absolutely god-awful goals. And I think a lot of the talk about the transfer and like where he was going to put his international allegiance, I think that kind of did his head in for a bit there. And, he seems to be stabilizing a little bit. But I think for the moment, the Fire, finishing the season out with the Fire is the place for him to be.
Jeff, wanted to ask you about Bale. Obviously, huge name, incredible resume. But there are question marks. Is he all in? He hasn't played that much over the last couple of years. How much will that impact him? Are you hearing skepticism around this, or is it pretty much all excitement right now?
It's pretty much all excitement. I mean, he has huge motivation to get on the field and get sharp, before the World Cup. I mean, that is, there's just no denying that. And given the way that LAFC has played, they look poised to go fairly deep into the playoffs. So if not win the whole thing. So, I think, I think there is some skepticism as to how much he can contribute, but I mean, you know, and this, let's face it, Chiellini and Bale, those are luxury signings on the part of LAFC. I mean, they were doing really well before, and now they have even more depth. So, but I'm not really hearing a ton of skepticism about Bale. I mean, you know, this is a big moment for Wales. I mean, what, it's the first time in 50, 60 years that they've managed to make it to the World Cup. So, like I said, he's got huge motivation to do everything he can to be at his sharpest when everybody heads over to Qatar.
Jeff, on the field, I watched them at the start of the season, was hugely impressed. And I'm going to say, maybe now it's time to ask the question in mid-July. Are Austin the real deal?
I think so. I mean, you can count me among the skeptics early on. It was like, right, well, who have they played? You know, who have they, you know, are they really that good? And, I mean, I think, what is it, 17, 18 games, however many it is that they've played, you know, I think that's a big enough sample size to say, yeah, they're the real deal. I mean, they've got an MVP candidate in Driussi. And I mean, I just love the way that guy plays, and he just strikes the ball so cleanly. And I mean, I think about that goal in one of their last games where I think it was a Rudy who hit a shot off the crossbar and Driussi just first timed it in. And yeah, I mean, everything he does is just so clean. And so, but obviously they've got other pieces as well. And I mean, Gabrielsson is getting talked up for newcomer of the year. I mean, he's been fantastic in the back. I mean, Alex Ring, I mean, he was kind of a known commodity when he was with NYCFC. So, I mean, they've got pretty good balance from front to back and from wing to wing. And yeah, I think they'll win the whole thing? I don't, but I'm, you know, they've certainly made huge strides this year. And I think in terms of being one of the best teams in the Western Conference, they're absolutely the real deal.
Jeff, from the good to the bad, I wanted to ask you about Toronto. Rough start for them this season. Carlos Salcedo has left, going back to Mexico. But Insigne coming in, Bernadeschi possibly coming in. I don't know if that's been finalized, but there's rumors of it. Is there still a pathway to a successful season for them?
I think so. I mean, you know, you look at the standings and, you know, you've seen it before. I mean, you've seen teams go on incredible runs in the back half of the season and be able to take a huge deficit in the standings and turn it into a playoff spot. So, I mean, just, you know, looking at the standings right now, I mean, they're 7 points back. I wouldn't say that's insurmountable. It certainly requires them acquiring or accumulating points at a much higher rate than they have. But, you know, I'm still, you know, skeptical. I mean, these pieces are going to have to get up to speed very quickly. You know, and we've heard time and again about how hard MLS is in terms of just adapting to the league, the travel, the weather. And then there's new teammates to get used to. And there's still quite a few young players that are going to continue to make mistakes. You know, I think the acquisition of Mark Anthony Kay is a big one. I mean, I think that's going to, you know, give them even more stability in midfield. But certainly that back line is what I'm still going to be looking at. I mean, Casito is there, and, you know, he's on the field, and that's a huge lift. But they still got some other pieces that I think they've got to fill in. And it, you know, Bob Bradley has his guys. I'm still a little confused at some of the moves that they made earlier in the season, like getting rid of Kamar Lawrence. I mean, just kind of giving up on that guy. I mean, it was a head scratcher, but, you know, we'll see how things coalesce and come together for that team, you know, in the last 3 months of the season.
Last one, you knew you weren't getting out of here without at least one U.S. men's question. A lot of prominent moves this summer from guys changing clubs over in Europe. Just curious, are any of those moves ones that you feel particularly good about, little worried about? Curious where you're at with some of them.
I mean, I'd say I feel pretty good about all of them. I mean, you know, when you think about Brendan Aaronson and Tyler Adams, I mean, if the Premier League comes calling, it's really hard to say no. I mean, just I think the uptick in wages, you know, the level of competition. I mean, I am, you know, given the way Adams kind of fell off a little bit towards the end of the season, you know, it does have me concerned about his situation at Leeds. I mean, obviously he's playing for Jesse Marsh, and those two guys go back a long way. Huge amount of trust there, but you know, we'll see how he plays. I mean, I'm a little less worried about Andrew. Okay, that was a Freudian slip. Brendan Aaronson, you know, I mean, Aaronson just strikes me as a guy who's going to find a way. He's going to find a way to get into that lineup and make a contribution. I mean, one guy I'm kind of intrigued by, just because a lot of American players don't tend to gravitate towards this league, is Luca De La Torre going to Celta.
I'm glad you said that. That's the one that's been most kind of on my mind since that move happened.
You know, it's, I mean, everyone's saying, oh, come on, he's a lock. You know, he's a lock to make it. I'm like, listen, if he doesn't play at all, I mean, Berhalter has shown a certain ruthlessness when it comes to that. Now, granted, he hasn't always been consistent. I mean, when you think about like John Brooks, but, you know, I think he's on the plane to Qatar, but, you know, is he going to reach his goal of being a starter on the U.S. men's national team? I think that's a tougher mountain to climb, but I am intrigued to see how he does. I mean, everyone, you know, you watch him play, he's very technical. You'd think that he would do very well in that league. I think Celta got him for, you know, $2 million. I mean, that seems like a bargain.
I loved it for them, yeah. And for him. You're a little bit unsure, it seems.
I mean, I think it was, listen, he couldn't spend his time playing in the Dutch second tier and I think, again, reach his goal of being a starter for the U.S. team. I think, he had to move somewhere. And, you know, he was pretty public with his desire to leave and, you know, saying that, hey, you know, I had an agreement with Heracles that, you know, I could leave after 2 years. I like it. I mean, I like the move. I'm just acknowledging that, hey, this could not work out for him. This could go a little sideways. Gotcha. But we'll just have to see how he does. And, you know, I think he is kind of that. I think he could start a game with the World Cup, depending on how things go. But I still think the Musa, McKennie, Adams trio is probably the one that's going to get the bulk of the minutes. I mean, we'll see what happens with Gio Reyna. We'll see what happens with Aaronson. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just, not many guys have gone to Spain. I mean, I'm thinking, God, Casey Keller, Carlos Bocanegra was there for a bit. Yunus Musa, obviously, but that's a little bit different situation.
Hoppy.
Yeah. And so, you know, guys are beginning to gravitate towards that league a little bit more, but it's still, I mean, when you think Europe, you think Germany, England. Some guys are going to France as well, some really young guys. I'm thinking of like Kobe Henry at Reims. And, but yeah, I mean, I think there's, you know, I've always admired La Liga as a competition, and this is going to give me another reason to watch. So I'm intrigued to see how De La Torre does.
Good stuff, man. Appreciate it as always. I'm sure we'll catch up soon. Thanks, Jeff.
All right. Anytime, guys.
Our thanks to Jeff. It had been a while. Always nice catching up with Jeff. I'm sure we'll speak with him again soon throughout the MLS season, closing in on the World Cup, definitely. But, yeah, some of that stuff, the Luca De La Torre, I think I like this. Like, I don't know. I think you know what I think of him as a player. Like, he has just been a guy who has, from the beginning of World Cup qualifying to the end, he won me over. So I'm in. And I just think, like, I'm good with this progression. I feel like it was time for him, I think, to take a step up to a different league. And I'm somewhere with him where he's going to have to earn it, but I believe that he will. Like, I just believe in his skill set, you know, just how comfortable he is as a player. I just think that it will, you know, what do they say? The cream rises to the top, something like that. Yeah. I believe that that'll happen. I just, that's kind of how I feel about him. And I think he can do it playing for, you know, he didn't go to Real Madrid or Barcelona or Atletico. Like, I think it's a club that suits him. And $2 million. I mean, I don't know. If I'm projecting like 3 years from now, I think that Celta Vigo will, I think they will make a good chunk of change on him. That's how I feel about it.
I think that's interesting. I have my concerns just about minutes, you know, that he does get enough time there, that he can get bedded in, because this is epitome of a mid-table team in La Liga. But they're, you know, they've got some players and they've got something about them, and there is pressure there. They, you know, kind of fluctuate between potential relegation candidates and kind of fighting for, you know, a mid-table or even better finish. That's kind of the zone they're in, and there's a pressure there. But I think it's a step up, and it's a good one for him. Tyler Adams, I've been dwelling on this one, Andrew.
Mm.
And I echo the concerns of Mr. Carlisle on that one, more than I do in terms of Luca Della Torre. Because Adams is going in and, you know, he's replacing not a club legend, but certainly
pretty close. I mean, the guy, Calvin Phillips, grew up like a lifelong Leeds fan, so he's kind of held in that regard.
Yeah, and I think Tyler Adams represents Marsh on the field. There's like a double pressure with it. He's his guy all the way up, and he has to come in and anchor that midfield after not being a starter where he was. That one for me.
Well, at the end, he had been a starter at Leipzig. It's not like he was a squad rotation player. But at the end, for whatever reason, he kind of fell out of favor.
He's got to hit the ground running, and he's got to, you know, drive that team from the center of the park.
It helps to have the manager in your corner the way Jesse Marsh clearly is for him.
But he has to perform. There's a lot riding on this for both him and Marsh.
Yeah. The one that that Jeff didn't get to, that obviously is forefront on my mind, is Matt Turner. Again, totally understand why he made the move to Arsenal. A club like that comes calling, whether you're the starter or not, you do it. Like, it's just, and you see how the chips fall afterwards. But I just want him playing regularly. It's interesting. You watch JJ, you know, sometimes U.S. soccer puts out like these like fun videos of players just kind of BSing like behind the scenes or whatever. So they did one with Tim Weah and DeAndre Yedlin, just like asking them questions about each other, about guys on the team. And there were a few questions that were like asking like really positive things about other players on the team. Like, who do you think would make the best president? Who's the guy that everyone, that you want to sit next to in the lunchroom? There was one other one too. And their answer for all of these was Matt Turner. And like on each one, they would just go into saying how like, yeah, he's just the best guy. And it was just interesting to me to get that insight. Like, I'm always curious as to like how different guys are viewed in that room by other guys. And it seems like he's that guy that everyone loves. And I don't know, you wonder like, does that matter? Like when knowing that, and Berhalter's got to make a decision, if it's like 50-50 between Turner and Stefan, like, does it matter that like guys in the room might be rooting for a guy or have a connection with a guy? Now, this is unfair for me to say, because they didn't say Zach Stefan, but they may love him too. Like, it sounds like the vibes are great between the whole team, to be honest. But I don't know.
Does it matter?
Just got me thinking.
That's a great question. I'm not sure it does. Like, Peter Schmeichel was not universally liked at Manchester United. In fact, a lot of people thought he was a bit of a but, I mean, Roy Keane fought with him, literally rolling around on tour in a hotel, punching each other. But no Man United player would have wanted anyone else between the sticks. So, not sure it matters, but
that situation is different, because I don't know that Stefan or Turner is the Schmeichel here. It's like, if there were two Schmeichels, how would you decide between them? You know, like, these guys are kind of equal skill set, they're kind of on level footing right now. There was no, like, Schmeichel had to start. He was clearly the best guy.
Yeah,
this
okay.
is different. But I get what you're saying.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I like that he's liked.
Yeah, me too.
Why do I like that?
I mean, in the video, you should watch it. It was. I enjoyed. They were fun. Tim Way and DeAndre Yedlin. But honestly, it seems like this team really loves each other. Makes them easier to root for. I watch those videos, JJ, and I just smile. I love the whole group.
They can't produce enough content for you until this World Cup kicks off.
You're right. Honestly, I want to let them know, U.S. Soccer admin, if you're listening, I'm here for all of it. All of it. All right? So keep it coming because it's brilliant. I love it. Let's go ahead. Let's take a break. We'll come back on the other side. We got a lot of transfer juice, JJ. All right? I know this is what the people want. Well, we're going to...
Andrew, transfers produce juice.
That's right. And they're going to drink it. You're all going to drink it up. More Caught Offside still to come. Back now on Caught Offside. JJ, I forgot I had this while we were a moment ago talking a little bit of U.S. soccer. I came across a clip on Twitter, which was really interesting to me. I loved it, and I wanted to play it for you. Danny,
I know what it is.
Danny Murphy,
yes,
was on Talk Sport, and they asked him a question. Here's what he said.
Did you play with guys at Liverpool or wherever who had to be angry so that you get the best out of them?
Well, the two obvious superstars I played against who always seemed angry and ready to go was Keane and Roy Keane and Rooney, always on the edge. And there is an argument to suggest they wouldn't be able to perform like they did. The one I played with, probably the angriest guy I ever played with, who played the same as he trained, and he was just on the edge the whole time, was an American guy called Clint Dempsey at Fulham.
Oh, yeah.
Tremendous player with a wonderful attitude, but was on the edge the whole time. But he channeled it.
It's the most on-brand answer. I could imagine Clint Dempsey heard that and probably was smiling ear to ear.
Oh, 100%.
Like if that's the legacy he leaves behind... Like that is the opinion that we all had of him. Like you could see the way he played. The story, JJ, about him punching the glass when he wasn't starting in the UEFA Cup. I mean, like he clearly has left behind some kind of lore in England, and I love it.
I you know what I love from that clip is how Jim White reacts to his name.
Yeah.
He just goes, "Oh yeah." He was but I always remember watching him in the Premier League before I moved to the States, his face, like everything was an affront to him. And I get that. You get on the field and you're just up against your enemy. You hate the person. You just despise them. And that anger drives you. He was a brilliant player.
I think Clint Dempsey is going to be a guy who, like, as we get older, I think Clint Dempsey will make me appear old. And by that, I mean, he's like just barely pre this generation of like American fans coming of age, thinking that like Pulisic, McKinney, whatever the next generation of great American players that we don't even really know about yet, who knows? Like as these guys are now becoming more and more prominent in Europe, Dempsey was probably like one of the first, not the first, but one of the first non-goalkeepers who was a legit star, I would say, in the Premier League. Maybe that's overstating it, but the things he did at Fulham, at least, I know not a huge club, but he did great things there. I feel like we're going to get older, and there's going to be like 25-year-olds who are going to just all be like, oh, Pulisic's the greatest American of all time. And he may well be, but there's always going to be a part of me that's going to be like, ah, but you never saw Dempsey. You never saw what Dempsey did.
No,
you didn't see his goal against Juve.
What's going to happen is you're going to hear, oh, Weston McKennie, such a badass. And he may very well be a badass. He will have had nothing on what Clint Dempsey did, and they will know little about him until they watch a 30 for 30 about his life.
Right, right.
And then they'll be like, I wish I had seen this guy play.
Right, like when I say like, oh, Iverson is the, the best scoring little man that I've ever, like, the guy who played. And the people just older than me be like, ah, he's great, but like you didn't see Isaiah. All right, whatever. Whatever, old head.
But it's like
we're gonna be
like,
that.
It's like right now when I talk to Man United fans, who are my age, and especially in the States, if we're in a bar, we're having a few drinks, we'll pick our best United 11s, and they'll all pick like in their fullback positions. They'll have like Patrice Evra there, and I'm like, you never saw Dennis Irwin. he took penalties for Manchester United when Cantona was on the field. That's how good he was.
That's going to be us.
That's us.
Stadler and Waldorf, right? Is that their names? The Muppets sitting up there just hating on everyone.
No. We'll be the cool guys just turning around and going, not well, actually. We won't well, actually, people. We don't want to do that.
No, I don't want to be that guy.
No, we'll just drop little nuggets of knowledge.
Yeah. Let's drop some more, JJ. Transfer time.
I thought we were drinking juice.
Transfer juice. I've got the juicer out. We're squeezing it. I'm putting Rafinha in the juicer as we speak, and we're getting Rafinha juice. It looks like it's happening. Leaving Leeds for Barca. Nothing official yet at time of recording, but as you know, we pride ourselves on dealing in rumors now. That's who we are and what we're about. So I'm going to act like this is happening because it feels like all parties are prepared for this to become an official thing. We knew this was coming. No real surprise. But it still feels like a big blow to Leeds.
Yeah.
I think he's great. Like, I really think highly of him.
I think so, but can we play Jesse Marsh's comments? I think I sent you Jesse Marsh's comments, right?
Can you
play them for a second?
Sure.
I'm hopeful for his sake, as much as it's hard to see him leave, I'm hopeful for him to get this deal done because I know it's his dream to play for Barcelona. So, and to be honest, you know, with Calvin and with Rafinha, it allows us to take the club, I think, also the next steps we need to go in the future. So that hopefully the next time that we have a player like that, we can make them understand that logically, actually, the best option is to stay because we're pushing for big goals.
That is like certifiable positivity.
Oh, yeah, sure. And I mean, that's his stock in trade. Mm-hmm. But I think with the way it's going, there's no point trying to keep an unhappy player. I think there's a certain realpolitik about the way Leeds have gone about their summer. And they've just said, Phillips is going. Let's get this done quickly with the least amount of fuss and get the money in and look to rebuild. And we're only going to look at Rafinha and say, okay, that was terrible for Leeds that he left. If the replacements that come in don't work out, like Sinistrea, etc. So Leeds are active and they want guys in. And they want to get rid of the guys they can get money out, that they can get money from and that don't want to be there. And honestly, I think that's a really realistic transfer policy. You know, I was listening to Jamie O'Hara on TalkSport today, who thinks Rafinha leaving and Calvin Phillips leaving is going to sound the death knell for Leeds United and that they will go down because of it. I don't feel that way. These are players that are very hard to replace, but if they have to go, get it done. Like, just get it done, get the money in, and look to reinforce. What else can Leeds do in the position they're in?
Yeah, I mean, well, they can play hardball. I mean, not every club is willing to let guys go right away. Sometimes it causes friction, but eventually those guys do stay and they play and they help. And, you know, if you're a club that's teetering, like I get what Jamie O'Hara says. If Leeds were 11th last year, they're not quite teetering on the edge. They're kind of firmly in the Premier League. This club was dangerously close to going down. So like one little flick of Leeds, and that could have been all it takes. Losing Phillips and losing Rafinha could be that flick. Now we'll see. We were just talking about Adams, whether or not he can slot right in. Jesse Marsh clearly has a plan for him. You know, obviously you and I have watched a ton of Brendan Aaronson. Jeff was talking about him. He just kind of believes that he'll find a way, and I do too. I think the return of guys like Patrick Bamford can't be understated enough. That's an enormous boost for them in terms of goal scoring that maybe they were lacking last year, a true goal scorer. So, it's not – I wouldn't go so far as to call it a death knell, but I'll be nervous. Like, they'll be – In our preseason preview, when I'm trying to go through, okay, who are my candidates to go down? They'll probably be one. I'm not saying I'm going to have them going down, but I'm going to consider them.
Wow.
Wait, is that weird?
I don't think so. But I mean, you have to think that the targets they have coming in, I mean, this is a club that has done very well in recruitment wise. You have to think that, or you have to give them the benefit of the doubt here. But I also think, you know, that there was a and you know, Phil Hay, who writes for The Athletic, I was reading him today. There was a natural point with both Phillips and with Rafinha where they have, you know, it's just time to go.
Oh yeah, I get it. I get it. But I'm saying they'll feel it. They had a Barcelona level player and a Manchester City level player playing at Leeds United, and they still almost got relegated. That's concerning.
I think it's more concerning. Junior Firpo is going to be out for 8 weeks, picking up an injury. Like, Leeds need to stop having injuries, like, or not have so many at once. Mm-hmm. And I also think they need to figure it out at centre back. Those are key positions for me too. I don't think it's going to just be on the Rafinha sale or the Calvin Phillips sale. But yeah, no, maybe you're talking me around, Andrew. Maybe there is a reason for concern.
Now, the other side of this, JJ, is Barcelona, who have been...
I can't wrap my head around this stuff. I mean, they owe Frankie de Jong 17 million in back payments.
God love them. They are just... they are operating in a world right now of, oh, money. What is it anyway? Like, I don't know how they're doing it. Now, Sid Lowe, if you just, I think it was on ESPN FC. If you just Google like Sid Lowe, Barcelona, Limite Salarial, you'll find this article. And he goes deep. I can't read you all of it, obviously. We would be here for a long time. And it's so in depth. There's parts of it I had to like reread to try to understand because my eyes, it makes your hair hurt. It's like that kind of like focus. But he's trying to explain how any of this is possible with the debt that, not only the debt that they're in, but because of that, there is a cap essentially on what they're allowed to spend. And they're just like, they're freewheeling it. Like, they don't even care. They're not going to be able to register players. And the problem that they're running into now is guys like Frankie de Jong. So they're making all these moves, and they're kind of going into it with the attitude of, okay, well, we'll register these players once we move other guys out. For one, they got to move out significant players, or they have to restructure contracts like they're trying to do with Ousmane Dembele. But like, they're expecting Frankie de Jong to go. The problem is he's got no interest in leaving. He doesn't want to go. He wants
None.
To
can
stay.
Can I read you the update? And I don't want Man United fans to like lose their mind, but this was from Fabrizio, here we go, Romano. Mm-hmm. Frankie de Jong's agents, Ali Dursan and Hassan Sintika, have informed Barcelona that Frankie has no intention to leave. Also that Frankie and agents are not accepting any salary reduction or talks related to that. Man United are also informed the deal is now stalling. I mean, I actually feel bad for Manchester United having to try and deal with Barcelona.
Oh, yeah. They're dealing with a crazy person. And meanwhile, all this is going on, and Barcelona are still interested in Robert Lewandowski. How? Like, if they figure a way out of all this and they make it happen, then, like, props to the Barca accountants or whoever it is that handles these things. I mean, look, they may sell their soul to make things happen this year, and down the line they may get bit by it with different like loan deals and things like that that they make with banks to try to make this all work. This is just one excerpt from Sid's piece, which, again, if you're interested in this, it's worth reading because it's a good explainer. But he says, Laporta has this week again insisted that while they want to build the squad that manager Xavi Hernandez wants, and while he feels some obligation to follow through on his promise to Lewandowski, even as the transfer fee rises way beyond what they'd hoped, any decisions must balance financial criteria too. There are still too many players earning too much money, exits that need to be found, ways of reducing the costs, not just to improve their limite salarial, which is the cap that they have on them from the league instituted cap, although that's the immediate issue, but because they just have to. Yet they also have to improve their squad, or believe they do. As one neat line put it, it's not easy to breathe in and breathe out at the same time. Like, they have to offload talent, but they're trying to build themselves back into being a Champions League final contender, and they're trying to do those two things at the same time. Something's got to give. I mean, I don't know how they're going to do it, but they're going for it. They're looking to invent this roadmap to be able to I don't know, rebuild and be a giant all at once? It's interesting. I find it fascinating.
Me too, and I don't understand a lot of it. I mean, maybe there's a lot of Spotify money coming to them now.
Honestly, I mean, that is some of it, the deal that they made with Spotify. Some of it is selling a portion of their La Liga TV rights. I don't know. It's wild. And look, like, it may work if they're able to figure out a way and register these players, and if they get Lewandowski and add him to this mix, and they do convince De Jong to leave, which I think, as good as he is, I think they could afford to, because they've got players who can, you know, fill in and play those positions. Like, I don't think they're far off from being a team that can contend in the Champions League.
I'm not convinced by that yet.
Even with Lewandowski?
Not convinced.
Well, you weren't convinced of Real Madrid until they were lifting the trophy, so, you know.
I still think that feels different. I mean, Andrew, we were waxing lyrical about them, and then they come up against what was a decent but workmanlike Eintracht Frankfurt team, and they got ripped asunder. Mm-hmm. So, that was not in the Champions League. So I'm not there yet with you. Did you see last week, by the way, Pedri has been absolutely piling on the muscle. He put on 4 kilograms of muscle in over the off season. And he's just, I guess he's, you know, he had a few injuries and he has come back.
Yeah. And he doesn't want to have that happen again. And he knows it's going to be another busy year.
I mean, I guess he's just trying to ramp up the muscle now while it all disintegrates over the 1,000 games he's going to play.
He just had to play in the Olympics, didn't he? I'll never get over that. With all the things he was doing, he had to do that too.
Let's not blame him for that.
I don't know who's to blame. It's just, look, I love that like attitude of just wanting to play soccer as much as you can. Like, that's how we all feel when we're young, you know. But I mean, it comes at a cost. It's grueling.
Well, there are rules, and once he was called up, Barcelona under the Olympic rules, Barcelona didn't have any way they could stop him from going. But also, there were people who shouldn't have called him up at all. But anyway, we're going back over old ground here. Yeah, he just looks absolutely ripped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see, a couple other quick ones, JJ. Just, I wanted to mention something quickly. I don't have much on this, but not for things that have happened, but for things that have not. Just a random observation. Newcastle, who, like, we kind of entered the transfer window thinking, like, okay, here we go. Like, get ready to see their name a lot. Like, I had to be reminded the other day that, like, this takeover had happened and that, like, they have these Saudi owners. Like, nowhere
unless
to be
you
found.
Consider loan moves to the Championship for Kieran Clark and Jeff Hendrick, then, yeah, it's been quiet.
Now, there's talk of them showing a lot of interest in Alexander Isak of Real Sociedad, and the number being thrown around is £75 million. But Sociedad are saying he's not for sale. So,
well, right, he's definitely for sale. What's happened is they've put on the Newcastle tax. Mm-hmm. So,
which goes on top of the Premier League tax.
Yeah, 100%. By the way, you know, this is a team that spent $100 million in the winter. So they're still trying to figure out their transfer policy. And they're also, they've got so much scrutiny on them, Andrew. They have to at least pretend that they are going to be within the rules and regulations of financial fair play, because they are way more under the spotlight than Man City were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Granted, FFP rules weren't introduced then, but you know what I mean.
And granted, that Man City, even with that being the case, had to kind of skate by on technicalities.
Very true, and are still under investigation, yeah, and are still in the courts. So, I mean, Newcastle are probably going to try and avoid all of that.
Right.
But, like, you know, Isak would fit their kind of profile of the kind of player, his age, his skill level, everything. But it's basically being gazumped by the fact that Real Sociedad see Newcastle coming and are like, all right, you're going to have to pay more.
Yeah. Let's see. We now enter the Manchester United portion of the program, JJ. So we had talked a couple weeks ago about Cristiano Ronaldo, Had he played his final game at United, where would he be going? Well, he was reportedly offered up to PSG, who turned him down, or his team, his representatives, turned him down. And I don't know. Like, if he wants to leave United, okay. But it takes two to tango, and I don't see a natural destination here for a team that will want him. And I wonder if it's going to end with him coming back to United sort of with his tail between his legs. You know, Ten Hag said that they want Cristiano Ronaldo, that he's part of their plans moving forward. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's posturing.
That's the political answer. What else can he say?
Yeah. There's a good chance this guy is going to be coming back because there's nowhere that he can go. So Ten Hag would do his best to want to get on Ronaldo's good side and try to not have a negative life force in that room. But so, JJ, I did sometimes what I like to do in these situations. You know, you and I, we can go on and on. People think we're United haters. So whatever. Sure. So I went straight to the source and I figured, you know what, I'd rather just hear from United fans on this rather than project my own feelings. And so I spoke to a couple that I'm close with. One said he does not want Ronaldo back, wants him gone, negative energy.
Sure.
Wants him out. And he was clear and blunt, and there was no gray area to it. And then I asked my other buddy, our mutual friend, Berenson.
Well, he thinks he's brilliant and he's not the problem.
So he said, he made a little bit of movement, JJ. He said, I'm indifferent. No question he can score goals, but it also feels like we're giving up a lot of team goals in place of his solo goals. He said, right. Last season with the team lacking direction and not really having any particular style of play, it was kind of necessary. This year, Ten Hag seems to have really instilled a new mindset and clear understanding of how United is going to play, and I'm optimistic that means more team goals. He said, having said that, if Ten Hag wants him, then I want him. If he's fine to let him go, I believe in what he's trying to do, and I say ship him off. So kind of a loyalty to whatever plan the manager
has. It's half a million a week. You want to move on, don't you? And can't you put that money somewhere else, something for the future?
I'd move on. And yeah.
I would. But again, how do you move on when there's nowhere to move him to?
And right, that's part of it. And then the other problem for United right now is, you know, you say, okay, you take that money and you do something to, you know, you reinvest it in the squad. You improve this team. I mean, they're not everyone's number one destination like they were a few years ago. They're not in the Champions League. Pretty much all the stories around them over the last couple of years have kind of been negative. I'm not going to go so far as to say that they've been a joke, but in a lot of media circles and on social media, they've had punchline qualities about them over the last couple of years. You know, you spend that many years in the spotlight being great, there's going to be a lot of people out there who are excited on your way down. And, you know, that's happened. So it's not like they've been painted in this glorious light over the last couple of years, which I'm sure has some kind of subconscious rubbing off effect on players when they're considering where they want to go. So it's one thing to say, okay, get rid of Ronaldo and just, you know, go get Lewandowski and you know, or reinvest it with other young strikers. But guys have got want to go there too. And so, you know, it's possible, but they may have to overspend and, you know, to make that happen. So it's not going to be easy for them.
No, just one more thing in United, because I don't want to go over old ground and I am curious as to what their next moves will be. But I was listening to Jonathan Wilson talk about them and specifically about Ten Hag and recruitment. And he goes, every week I just hear about it's some Ajax player or some Eredivisie player that Ten Hag either work with or knows. And he's like, this is the stuff we criticized David Moyes for doing when he got the Man United job, just signing guys he was aware of or had worked with. And he asked, where's the scouting department? Where's the, you know, trying to unearth young talent from around Europe that other clubs do? I thought that was interesting.
I guess, but I would not hate on a Frankie de Jong acquisition.
No, it wasn't that one in particular. It was like, he was just talking generally. I'm in terms as all in as you can be for being a Liverpool supporter. I actually think Ten Hag is a great appointment.
Yeah, I like it a lot too.
So I'm not there with the criticism, but no, it was just interesting to hear Jonathan Wilson say that.
Along those lines, preseason is underway. I don't have many takeaways from this, but United did beat Liverpool 4-0 in Bangkok. I think that probably is something that Liverpool fans will kind of not pay much attention to. United fans might choose to take a little bit more from it, considering they've got a new manager that, you know, they want to see what he's about. And I don't blame them for that at all. The only
I think what you take from it is that you see guys who, you know, came in with big reputations and who you need to be good. You need them to start playing well. Jadon Sancho, he scored. And you look at Anthony Martial, who didn't have a great time at Sevilla on loan. And if things don't really work out for United the way they want, Martial will still be there and they need to get something out of him this season. So he scores. So that's good.
That was my takeaway. The same. Martial.
That's all you can take, though. I mean, it's a preseason friendly. No supporter is United supporter is going to be walking away singing. No serious United supporters are going to be come away from that and think, oh yeah, here we go.
Yeah,
but they will be pleased that, you know, Sancho Martial did something in the game. That's all you can take from.
Yeah, the Martial thing in particular. I saw this from Andy Cole, who he questioned Martial's capability before. This is from I'm reading this from UnitedInFocus.com. Former Manchester United striker Andy Cole questioned Martial's capability before the game, telling MUTV, quote, he's got to make his mind up what he really wants. I'm yet to see him sprint full out in 5 years. Hopefully the manager can get something out of him. After watching Martial's first 45 minutes of preseason, Cole had positive remarks about the forward. He said, that's the quickest I've seen him move. He's closed down really well. I find Martial so interesting, JJ, because it feels like there's almost a last chance thing going on here with him. And you never know exactly how a player is going to respond to being in that sort of situation and that kind of pressure. And it could squeeze Martial out. He may not rise to it. They may say, okay, you don't have what it takes to play here. Or it may go the other way, and they may finally get the best out of him. I feel like this is, you know, for a guy who we've almost kind of forgotten about over the last couple seasons, I wonder if maybe he could play his way back into prominence with them this year.
United's inability to move players on who should have been moved on years ago is lucky for Anthony Martial, because it's going to throw him up another opportunity. You say it's drinking in the last chance saloon. The last chance saloon should have closed 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. It should be shut down and it should have been turned into a Starbucks for him. But it's still open. And because of just the way the club is operating, the way they hand out contracts and the way they can't move on expensive, high-wage talent, he's getting another go. So you're right. There is an opportunity there for him.
Yeah. So there you go. Should be interesting. Preseason will progress. We'll continue to kind of monitor it. But like I said before, I don't necessarily – it's hard to take too many things away from this because you don't know – like, you don't know what teams are working on. The second half of that game – I mean, granted, United looked good, actually, with, like, they made 10 changes, brought in all these young players, had some nice moves. But it's just hard to know. But yeah, when you got a new manager like Ten Hag, it's good to get started like that. Let's take another break. We'll come back on the other side, wrap up with a few things internationally, and then we'll get on out of here. More Caught Offside still to come. One other thing, JJ, we were talking about preseason. I don't know if you saw this. I think it went a little bit viral. But so Tottenham are in South Korea, and you know, they had their first training session, and like, it was all smiles and everything. Like, there's video of Son, who had stayed behind in South Korea, meeting the team at the airport as they got off the plane, and there's like hundreds of fans at the airport, and it's all everyone's laughing and happy. Then they have their first training session, and Conte, have you ever seen Miracle, JJ, the movie?
I have, yes.
Okay, remember this scene?
Again!
Where Herb Brooks just, like, runs them to death, or skates them to death in that movie, with just, like, the up and backs.
Yeah.
You know, so all this happy friendliness going on with Tottenham, they're waving to the crowd, and then Conte just comes in, and I thought he was going to kill him. I mean, there were players just, like, dropping to the ground at the end of the training session. So they had, I have it here, at the Spurs web tweeted, Spurs fitness coach Gianpiero Ventura made the Spurs players run 42 lengths of the pitch today in 30 degrees Celsius heat at the end of the training session. So they trained for 2 hours and then ran 42 lengths of the pitch up and back in almost 90 degree heat in Korea. And like Sun dropped, had to be helped up. Matt Doherty dropped. Like, I mean, it looked like war. It was,
those are the old school stories you hear. So you used to hear about, hill runs and run until you got sick.
Yeah.
And that in the first week of training, you wouldn't see a single ball. Like the balls weren't, you wouldn't take the, and players were so delighted to see the ball because they felt like it was a rest.
I just found it funny because this was done in a stadium full of people. It was an open training session for Korean fans. And they all got to watch. Like it felt very human. Tottenham players just being humbled.
Didn't Harry Kane vomit everywhere?
Did he? I didn't see that. He was standing up. There, Son, Doherty, who were the others? There were a couple players that were just like, that could not get up. It was something. Conte, as a fan, kind of love it, to be honest. Kind of love it.
Oh, no, you're going to be the fittest team. Also, this team is a team that under Mourinho just fell off a cliff in terms of its fitness. So this is it coming full circle.
Let's see. A couple other things before we get out, JJ. I wanted to mention, of course, what's going on right now in Europe, the Women's European Championships. And I wanted to mention England specifically. They laid a beating down on Norway a couple days ago that I still can't believe I witnessed. Every time I looked up, they were scoring. Norway are good. Like, not just good. They're good, good. Like, they're like, we can maybe win this thing good. To see them get just taken apart like that, I mean, I guess not since Brazil-Germany in 2014 have I seen a legitimately good team get just embarrassed that way in an international tournament. I mean, this was unbelievable stuff.
It was horrifying. It was so unexpected. And I tweeted before the game, and I wasn't the only one who felt this way. This was England's first test. You know, this was a really good Norwegian side, ranked 11th. England were ranked 8th. Ed Hegerberg was going to be up front. They could have had Zlatan Ibrahimovic, prime Zlatan, and prime Alan Shearer up front. It wouldn't have made a difference. They couldn't get the ball to her. They couldn't get the ball, period. England ran riot. And they got them on the flanks through Hemp. And they had, Mead was, I mean, she was just dominating. Ellen White got in on the act as well with some goals. But you could see what was happening and the way England were able to play through the lines and pick passes. And you're just screaming at the television for the Norwegian managers to do anything, like go to five at the back, drop a fullback or drop a central midfielder in front of a fullback for 10 minutes just to try and stem the tide. Andrew, he sat there, the Norwegian manager, kept panning to him, obviously, after every goal went in. Mm-hmm. And he just looked paralyzed, absolutely paralyzed. He could do nothing, absolutely nothing. And I mean, I don't know how Norway come back from that. It was a humiliation.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And, you know, I was thinking about it more from the England perspective because, you know, we sat here doing this podcast a week ago when you spoke about, you know, I'm getting those England feelings again of watching a dour, dull 1-0. And then this happens. And I'm trying to reconcile the two of like, okay, well, who are they? This turnaround from game to game, I have like the comparison here. So obviously one goal versus Austria to the 8 that they've scored versus Norway. Their XG, 1.9 against Austria, 6.2 against Norway. Chances created, 12 versus Austria, which is actually a decent amount considering they only scored one, but 18 chances created against Norway. Touches in the attacking penalty area, 34 against Austria, 53 against Norway. Are they like, did something just get unlocked in them, I wonder? And are we going to see maybe an England that we weren't necessarily expecting coming into this tournament? Are we about to see one of the most fun teams in this tournament as opposed to what you thought they were going to be coming in?
I just don't know yet. I think they're a very good side. I think they're clearly showing why they're favorites. Although the best team I've seen so far, I feel, is Germany. They followed up their opening day win with a 2-0 victory over Spain yesterday. I like the Germans the most because they've been, you know, more solidly consistent. And England, Andrew, they've got such athleticism and power. I mean, they could just bulldoze teams. It's so hard for me to know anything, and I should know lots after playing a team ranked as high as Norway. But Norway were so abject. I don't know yet. I don't know yet. I think England are very good, though.
Yes.
They're up there with the teams I've seen so far. I would rank them, and I've watched pretty much, I think, nearly every game. I would say Germany are my number one. England are joint number one with them in terms of favorites. And then everybody after that is significantly below them.
Maybe. I thought really fun game today between the Netherlands and Portugal.
Awesome game.
3-2. Daniela van de Donk scored a great winner in the 62nd.
I thought Portugal were the team in that game, though, Andrew. I thought technically they were so good. Like, I mean, Jessica Silva, Diana Silva, Pinto. It was, I mean, they are going to be a fun team for years to come.
And I know, you know, it felt like the Netherlands saw a lot of the ball, had a lot of chances. I don't know. I
gave up a 2-0 lead, though. That's not the stuff of champions.
True, but they won, and that is.
They did, but if you watch that game, Portugal were in it right to the end. Maybe they didn't create the flurry of chances at the end, and they weren't able to fashion an equalizer, but it took something special from Van de Donk to separate them in the end. But I really do think Germany and England are the two outstanding teams I've seen so far. It's been a very fun tournament so far.
Yeah. Yeah, it really has been. A lot of goals, a lot of good games. It's been really good stuff. Finally, last thing I wanted to mention, I don't know if you have anything else, but I wanted to mention Iran. Obviously, not necessarily a mainstay on this podcast, but they're in Group B with the United States at the World Cup.
So weird, this situation, isn't it?
So when things happen with them that are weird, because of that association, I feel it warrants mentioning. Dragan Skocic was their manager. He won 15 of his 18 games in charge. He led them to their fastest ever World Cup qualification, but he lost two of his last three, and he's been fired. There's more to it, though. So I'm reading now from, bear with me here. Hopefully this is interesting enough where you'll enjoy my reading. This is from IranWire.com. I'm a very loyal reader of IranWire.com. It's one of my...
You have a subscription. I got it for you for Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. I have a paid account so I can get through the paywall, all those things. This is from IranWire.com. They write, this is back on June 20th, so before he had been fired. They're talking then about like what the situation was. Dragan Skocic, the manager of Iran's national football team, and Mirshad Majeti, acting president of the Iranian Football Federation, reportedly had a shouting match last week that lasted for, ready for this, JJ? More than 90 minutes.
Oof, that's a lot of shouting.
Where was someone to get in to break it up and like say, okay, cool down. Let's go into separate room. Have you ever seen a shouting match last for more than 90 minutes? That's unbelievable. It continues now. Mere months before Team Melli is due to compete in Group B at the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar, consultations are taking place at President Raisi's office on possibly sacking Skocic and inviting back the former head coach, Carlos Queiroz. Despite the overall triumph, a number of the players are against Skocic remaining in post until the end of this year's contest. After the Algeria match, Alireza Benrevand, Sandar Azmoun, Alireza Yahanbash, Omid Ebrahimi, Mehdi Taremi, and Ehsan Hazafi met with Sports Minister Hamid Sejati, who's reportedly lobbying for the return of Carlos Quiroz. Skocic had gone to the Federation to ask Majetti about outstanding sums of money owed to him. Majetti reportedly told Skocic that he had not expected criticism by members of the team, and Skocic shouted back that he had expected to be paid on time. You want to see what dysfunction looks like? This is what it looks like. Now, I don't know what this means in terms of the World Cup. Like, U.S. fans will be thinking, oh, this is great. Like, they're a mess. Maybe. I don't know. Is there a correlation between that and teams not performing well at World Cups? Did they do this just in time? Like, 4 months, is that enough time to settle things? I don't know. It may not mean anything in terms of what happens at the World Cup. I just found it wild and kind of interesting and kind of funny thinking about a 90-minute shouting match.
Yeah. I went on to PersianFootball.com.
Oh.
And they ripped a piece from the Tehran Times. And they were reporting that Iranian coaches Javed Nakunam and Amir Galani are candidates to lead the national team. So they don't mention a potential Quiroz return. Mm-hmm. We should do something ahead of the World Cup. We should have mess watch. And I think Canada and Iran would be top of the table right now. Mess watch. It's brought to you by, I don't know.
Like Downey. They clean up messes, right?
Yeah, good one. Like it. Yeah, old marketing Andy.
Yeah, we should probably, I mean, we're going to do, leading up to the World Cup, obviously, we'll do our group previews and all that. But I wonder if we should do, specifically for Group B, in the clubs on each of the other teams.
That could be fun.
Because this Iran thing is really fascinating.
Do you know who Dragan Skocic took over from in February 2020?
Was it Ali Dai?
No, a former pod favorite. Mark Vilmots.
Vilmots, that's right. Vilmots. Remember we
we ripped him. Oh, good Lord. Was that the last thing you had? Because I got two things
that's
I wanted to
do. That's the last
quickly.
Thing I had. I'm done.
Okay.
Clocking
two
out.
Things. This came down today, and it's kind of important. From France 24 News. A French Senate inquiry into chaotic scenes at the Champions League final in May in Paris concluded Wednesday that the problems were caused by a string of dysfunctions in the organization rather than Liverpool supporters, as claimed by the government. Quote, these dysfunctions were at every level, not only during the implementation, during the game, but also during preparations in advance. The co-chair of the inquiry, Laurent Lafont, told reporters at a press conference, the dysfunctions included a failure to anticipate how supporters would arrive at the stadium due to a transport strike, inadequate instructions, and the use of police checkpoints that caused pressure points on the way to the game. The fact-finding mission led by two senators was heard from witnesses since the game on May 28th, which was marred by delayed kickoff, crushes, tear gas, and street crime. The inquiry discounted the issue of fake tickets, the late arrival of supporters at the stadium, or the presence of thousands of fans without tickets as the main causes. So we got there in the end after weeks of slander that began right at the match.
Here's the thing, like,
blaming supporters. It's a little bit too late, but.
Well, yeah, although, well, not really. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but like you. When are these people going to realize that, like, it's not 1970? You know, if you're going to blame supporters, then, like, in a world where everyone has a video camera and can freely post that footage to any number of social media websites around the globe, like, if you're going to say Liverpool fans were to blame, where's the footage? Did we see even one single clip of Liverpool fans doing anything untoward in the build-up to that match? Even one clip. I didn't. Not one. I saw police acting a way that was inappropriate. I saw what appeared to be local young fans streaming into the ground and jumping over fences. I saw a setup that was also wildly inappropriate in terms of shuttling fans into the stadium. I must have watched, I don't know, like 30, 40, 50 videos, like whatever was available on Twitter, I watched. None of them. Did you see anything happening that involved Liverpool fans behaving badly? So, like, if you're going to make these claims, like, how can you forget that, like, we can all see what's going on?
Yeah, you're right.
So they had no choice. Like, they kind of had to come clean here and say that, you know, this, we got it wrong. I guess you're right. They probably should have done it sooner, even though the match was only a month and a half or so ago.
Yeah. So that's good news, exoneration of a sort. And finally, David Beckham announcing today on Instagram, I'm excited to confirm that I am partnering with Netflix on a documentary series about my life and career. The series will feature unseen archive, untold stories, as well as interviews with the people who have been a part of my journey. The series is directed and produced by Academy Award winners At Fisher Stevens and John Batzik. Watch this space.
Okay.
You don't seem too interested.
No, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Sure, I'm interested. I saw his son scored a brilliant free kick the other day for Inter Miami 2. Romeo Beckham. It's in the genes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why, were you looking for more from me? you want a high five? I mean, sure.
I think my reaction was pretty much in line with yours. Okay. Just as if we haven't had enough Beckham over the last 20 years. I really do hope this is insightful, though, and interesting, and makes me think and gives me, you know, because we all know his career inside out at this point.
It's interesting. I admire you. You consume so many of these soccer documentaries, and yet it feels like you enjoy so few of them.
Yeah, a lot of them are bad.
So at a certain point, it becomes a you problem.
No. It becomes a, you know, give me a different angle. Why didn't you talk about this thing? I don't want the sanitized version, which is everything we get with Beckham is bland platitudes. I mean, so Gary Neville's The Overlap, where he interviews someone interesting from the world of soccer over 40, 45 minutes. I mean, the Roy Keane one, where he goes for a walk with Roy Keane, it's about as compelling a watch. And it has like 5 million views and counting on YouTube. And he did the same thing with David Beckham in Qatar. And it was just an advert for the Qatari World Cup, which is Beckham's job right now. He's an ambassador for Qatar. But he never says anything interesting, Andrew. Like, he never... I mean, it was probably the most interesting I've heard him at, and that it was still pretty bland, pretty boring. So I'd be concerned about the documentary.
So there's JJ's pre-review. He hasn't seen it yet, but he's already warning you.
No, but I can think often the good documentaries, and we know it from ESPN because 30 for 30 sets the template. They are never sanctioned by, and they're never, I wouldn't say never, because The Last Dance was obviously sanctioned by Jordan.
Oh yeah.
But they're never, or they're rarely, you know, done with, in collaboration with someone.
Well, this Derek Jeter 7-part series is coming out, and I'm curious about it. I'll watch that.
Yeah. But like,
and he's got a little bit of Beckham to him. In the way that, like, rarely does Jeter say the wrong thing. He's kind of bland. We, you know, but I'm curious about this because I think that they'll, you know, already you see certain things leaking out about, you know, his relationship with Alex Rodriguez, things like that. So I'll be curious.
I guess it's tough if you're Jeter and Beckham and people like that who've just had the spotlight on them all their careers, and we've seen everything. Well, I guess in Jeter's case, we haven't. He was intensely private, so maybe we'll get more of a glimpse there. But again, my favorite documentary of all of the ESPN 30 for 30 genre was Ezra Edelman's 6-parter on O.J. Simpson.
Incredible.
Which is just stunning. So, I mean, once you've had that, nothing's going to come close.
Well, there you go, my friend. That about does it. I guess a couple quick notes. We talked about some of these things, but I'm seeing now that the Raheem Sterling move to Chelsea has apparently been completed. that's going to take some getting used to, seeing Raheem Sterling in a Chelsea shirt. Well, pretty interesting. So that's done. Good bit of business for Chelsea. He'll help.
I think so.
I think so. I mean, we think really highly of him. So, yeah, good move for them. And what was the one other thing? Oh, yeah, you were talking before. We should close this out. You were talking before about Ten Hag being interested in attracting other, I guess, Ajax products to Manchester United. Lisandro Martinez looks like that's close to happening for Manchester United. An Ajax player. So,
yes.
I mean, part of that, I see what you're saying, or whoever it was that you were reading from.
It was Jonathan Wilson.
You know, that he's just going with what's familiar. Some of that maybe, but some of it might be that he knows the guys that will do what he wants. And he knows, you know, who's going to know these guys better than him. He knows what they're capable of. Ajax were pretty good, by the way. So I'm okay with it. I know it might seem easy, but I'm okay with some of those moves. So Manchester United trying to get things done. That's about it. I'm glad you're feeling better, JJ. I look forward to hearing everything about your trip to Sligo, to the ground. What's the name of where they play?
The Showgrounds.
Love it.
Yeah. And I had 5 of the best pints of Guinness last night that I've ever had.
Wow.
Just glorious, Andrew. Nectar of the gods. You would love it so much.
So you've bounced back. You're good now.
You get a
night of 5 Guinnesses. That's a good, you're back.
Yeah, and I'm going for a run tomorrow in the fresh air.
You're going to look like Pedri by the time you come back. Well, hey, I look forward to seeing you. I know you're coming back this weekend. Enjoy the rest of your time in Ireland. Have a safe flight back. Hopefully I'll see you next week, buddy.
Can't wait to see you, bro.
To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.